This is Nick Nugent with your Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Monday, July 20th, 2020. Today, you will hear about the death of civil rights icon John Lewis, a new cancer diagnosis for Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and federal agents in camouflaged attire and unmarked vans policing the city of Portland. Our first story, Representative John Lewis passed away on Friday, succumbing to pancreatic cancer at the age of 80. Lewis was a civil rights icon and had represented a congressional district that included parts of Atlanta in the House of Representatives since 1986. Lewis was also a profile of hard work and courage. The third of 10 children, Lewis grew up on a sharecropping farm in segregated rural Alabama. Lewis shared in farm responsibilities, leaving school at harvest time to pick cotton, peanuts, and corn. His family's house had no plumbing or electricity. In the outhouse, an old Sears catalog was used as toilet paper. As a boy, Lewis had a heart for the gospel and would not only read the Bible to the family chickens as he fed them, but also baptized them when they were born and conducted elaborate funerals for them when they died. He put himself through college in Nashville by working as a dishwasher and janitor. He got his start in the civil rights movement when he wrote a letter to Martin Luther King, whom he had heard on the radio, and King responded by sending him a bus ticket to visit him in Montgomery. He participated in many acts of nonviolent protests and demonstrations and had the scars to prove it. He was arrested some 40 times from 1960 to 1966 and was repeatedly beaten senseless by Southern policemen. During the Freedom Rides in 1961, he was left unconscious in a pool of his own blood. In 1965, in a melee known as Bloody Sunday, Lewis was badly beaten by a state trooper in a march in Selma, Alabama, who cracked his skull with a billy club and then hit him again when he tried to get up. This incident was televised, which outraged the nation and galvanized support for the Voting Rights Act of 1965. You can find videos of Lewis being trampled and beaten on YouTube if you want to see for yourself. Even after being elected to Congress, he was arrested again in Washington several times, including outside the South African embassy for demonstrating against apartheid and Sudan's embassy while protesting genocide in Darfur. So what lessons can we take from John Lewis's life? We decry the increasing marginalization of Christians in cancel culture, which threatens Christians with Twitter mobs and job loss for speaking out against evil. But how many of us, like Lewis, have been arrested for speaking the truth? How many of us have received physical blows for our efforts? We'd all do well to emulate the courage and dedication of a figure like John Lewis. But while Lewis fought bravely against racial oppression, he actively supported other forms of oppression aimed at an even more vulnerable population, a population in which African Americans are disproportionately victimized. I'm referring, of course, to the unborn. Lewis scored a perfect 100% rating by NARAL Pro-Choice America for his voting record on abortion. He voted no on funding for healthcare providers who don't provide abortion info. He voted no on making it a crime to harm a fetus during another crime. He voted no on banning partial birth abortions. The list goes on and on. Civil rights are central to democracy. But one cannot exercise any civil rights if one is dead, because others are legally permitted to kill him. All civil rights depend on the foundational civil right to life. Lewis either failed to see this most basic truth, or was so beholden to illiberal, and yes, I use that word intentionally, illiberal constituencies that kept him in office, that he suppressed the truth and his conscience along with it. In either case, we must fault him and his legacy. And so, we celebrate the work he did to advance racial civil rights, and we look to him as an example of fortitude and courage. But we do not allow those virtues to obscure the grave injustice he inflicted on other civil rights, including the plight of black children in the most dangerous environment in America for black children, their mothers' wombs. And we pray that his successor will advance the full spectrum of civil rights that should be guaranteed to all people. And in a related story, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has announced that she has had a recurrence of cancer and has been receiving chemotherapy since May. Lesions on her liver were detected in the course of a periodic scan in February. This is now the fifth time Ginsburg has been treated for cancer. In 1999, she had surgery for colon cancer. In 2009, she had surgery for, and obviously survived, early-stage pancreatic cancer, which is one of the more deadly forms of cancer. In 2018, when receiving treatment for broken ribs, doctors found cancer on her left lung and removed part of her lung as part of the treatment. Last summer, she received 3 weeks of radiation treatment for a localized cancerous tumor on her pancreas. She and her doctors managed to beat the cancer in each such occurrence, such that she told CNN in January that she was cancer-free. And this fifth bout may likewise end in victory for the 87-year-old justice, since receiving chemotherapy, the lesions on Ginsburg's liver have shrunk, and no new disease has been detected. Obviously, we wish Ginsburg well and pray for a full recovery. But the possibility that she might not survive this occurrence, however likely or unlikely, has enormous implications for the upcoming election. Whatever we might say about Trump, and whether he's actually conservative or even competent, it can't be denied that he has generally appointed conservative judges to the courts, including two generally conservative justices to the Supreme Court. Nor can it be denied that as president, Joe Biden would almost certainly appoint progressive judges and justices. Justices who would vote to strike down just about any abortion restriction that would come before them. Justices who, when considering the tension between LGBT non-discrimination laws and religious liberty, would give more weight to LGBT interest most of the time. It's important to note that the Supreme Court does not have a 5-4 majority of conservative justices merely because 5 members of the court have been appointed by Republican presidents. The Supreme Court has a 4-4 split at best, with Chief Justice Roberts, who's focused primarily on protecting the image of the court when it comes to hot-button issues, as an unreliable swing vote. There are abortion restrictions, even outright bans on abortion, making their way through the court system today and en route to eventual adjudication by the Supreme Court. But Chief Justice Roberts is by no means a shoo-in vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. If Ginsburg were to die or become unable to continue her role on the court, filling her seat with a potentially more reliable conservative justice, say an Amy Coney Barrett, could shift the court further to the right and provide a critical fifth vote to overturn Roe. And so, although we pray for Ginsburg's health and recovery, we also pray that if she does leave the court under any circumstance, a Republican president is in office to appoint her successor. Don't forget to register for the first annual Fight Laugh Feast Conference, which will be in Nashville, Tennessee from October 1st through the 3rd. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register today. And finally, controversy is surrounding the Department of Homeland Security's deployment of federal agents in camouflaged military uniforms to protect federal property in Portland, Oregon. As reported by Oregon Public Broadcasting, quote, federal law enforcement officers have been using unmarked vehicles to drive around downtown Portland and detain protesters since at least July 14th. Personal accounts and multiple videos posted online show the officers driving up to people, detaining individuals with no explanation of why they are being arrested, and driving off. Interviews conducted by OPB show officers are also detaining people on Portland streets who aren't near federal property, nor is it clear that all of the people being arrested have engaged in criminal activity. End quote. And both OPB and the Washington Post recount the story of demonstrator Mark Pettibone, who said several men in green military fatigues jumped out of an unmarked van and approached him. He then ran for half a block before sinking to his knees and putting his hands in the air. He was detained and searched. They drove him to the federal courthouse and placed him in a holding cell. Two officers eventually returned to read his Miranda rights. Soon afterward, they let him go. The federal officers did not tell him why he had been detained or provide him any record of an arrest. Portland's mayor, the Oregon governor, and both Oregon senators have labeled these tactics as authoritarian and have called upon the DHS to remove the agents immediately. And the U.S. Attorney for the Oregon District has requested an investigation into the tactics. Some conservative pundits are piling on. From A La Pundit at Hot Air, quote, the only reason to wear camouflage here, it seems, is to intimidate. They're emulating troops because they want to instill the same fear of violent harm in the enemy that a combat uniform instills on the battlefield. Same goes for the lack of identifying markers on their uniforms. To all appearances, the point of that is to suggest to vandals, protesters, whoever, that there'll be no accountability for anything these guys end up doing to them. Literally anything might happen to you if you end up in their custody, or so they want you to think. End quote. So, a few comments on this story. First of all, it's important not to simply revert to our political priors when analyzing this. Conservatives have been rightly aghast at the fact that liberal mayors and governors have allowed violent mobs to run roughshod over government and even private property. Portland represents one of the worst areas for lawlessness and violence. Acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf has defended the need for these agents to protect federal property and has published a long list of crimes committed against federal property in Portland by anarchists over the past 6 weeks. It's therefore tempting to reflexively cheer any solution that involves cracking down on these violent thugs in order to restore law and order. But as Christians and conservatives, we must always be on guard against government encroachment. And the militarization of the police force should always be a concern. Any power we grant to the federal government, any tactics used by its agents, could just as well be used against us in the future. And so, we should support efforts to restore law and order in Portland while remaining vigilant about creeping federal, military, and police power. But at the same time, we shouldn't be taken in by cries of alarm from the progressive left or even the libertarian right just because these agents are sporting camouflage and using unmarked vans. There may be legitimate reasons for both. Perhaps camouflage is being used to intimidate. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Rioters have been sufficiently unintimidated by blue-uniformed police to date, even in riot gear, and they've only continued in their mayhem and even attacked those officers. And they've often sought to attack police specifically because they believe that police are systemically racist against black and brown people. Senator Tom Cotton suggested mounting an overwhelming show of military force to deter rioters. He was criticized by the left and by some on the right for endorsing state violence against U.S. citizens, but that's not true. That is not what he argued. He argued for an overwhelming show of force, not an overwhelming use of force. And the purpose of an overwhelming show of force is so that you don't have to use it. And so maybe there's an argument to be made that a police force that looks more like the military will prevent more injury and save more lives, both of the rioters and of the police, than if the police sport their typical blue uniforms. Maybe unmarked vans are useful because they allow agents to patrol the area and observe what's going on the ground without immediately causing lawbreakers to flee. Normal police use plainclothes officers and unmarked vehicles all the time. Just the other day, I saw a vehicle pulled over on the side of the road by a pickup truck that turned out to be a police vehicle. I'm not saying my analysis is gospel here, but let's not rush to judgment just because we hear a few trigger words. The real issue is not camouflage trappings or unmarked vans. The primary concern should always be the civil rights of those who are confronted or arrested. And there may be legitimate criticisms of the tactics reported by these news outlets if people who are not breaking the law are indeed being shoved into vans and secreted away to the catacombs of federal buildings for interrogation. But let's also not forget that the news stories to date have come from only a few sources. People like Pettibone, who may have an ideological axe to grind and may not be the most reliable citizen reporter. Or perhaps the agents did indeed screw up in this case. But agents, as humans, are bound to make mistakes. And we can't assume that every interaction looks like a scene from Zero Dark Thirty. Like many things in life, the solution may be a series of tweaks, rather than a major change in what's being done, rather than pulling the troops out of the area entirely. The U.S. attorney has called for an investigation into these tactics. Good! Transparency is good. Accountability and criticism are good. And I hope that if an investigation happens, it identifies areas that need improvement, and those improvements are quickly implemented. And remember, we're still in only the early stages of this operation and the reporting on it. So let's try to reserve judgment until more facts come out and more people have had time to make thoughtful arguments on both sides. This is Nick Nugent with Cross Politic News. You can find this and all Cross Politic shows at crosspolitic.com or on the Cross Politic app. You're listening to the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network.
Thank you.